Yeah, and you see people as guides to one's intentions, right? And their desire to actually contribute. This means you design work systems where people are called on to evolve all offerings and not just a narrow slice. Welcome back to Business Second Opinion Podcast. We're always excited to bring you another episode. But first, we want to thank our sponsor for Business Second Opinion, Guayaki. I had to re-up this week in order to push to get our podcast edited in time for you folks. But man, am I glad that Guayaki continues to brew their mate-based goodness. Mate, also turns out, has 24 vitamins and minerals, 15 amino acids, and abundant polyphenols. We hope you're going to check out this great beverage with your friends and family, and let us know what you think. Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. In the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion, as you know by now, a contrarian opinion, but one that's well-tested and proven to give you the outcomes you want without the nasty side effects. And by the way, if you want to learn more about how to work more closely with us, stay tuned at the end of the show. I'm Zach Swartout, and with me as always is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Zach. I'm really curious about what you think about today's article. Maybe you could give people some reference for it. And what got us into the briar patch that we're about to explore?
Yeah, okay, here we go. So Karen Olson Ramanujan runs Regenpreneurs, which engages with entrepreneurs, working with them to be innovators. So she sent us this doozy of an article entitled Scaling Culture in Fast-Growing Companies, posted on HBR Online in June of 2019 by Jordana Valencia. So Karen's question is the following. I'd love to hear your take on the ever-present topic du jour, scaling. It seems to be a byproduct of a constant growth mentality that doesn't align with the reality of its planet and finite resources. So I keep wondering if there's a framework that Carol would use to help us expand our impact. And specifically here, Karen pointed to this article as the author examines how they believe culture plays a role in supporting what she calls hyper-growth organizations. So to your question, Carol, my first hit on this article was that it was born almost entirely from a behaviorist worldview. But maybe I hand this one off to you for a moment so we can give our listeners a prognosis of the full scope of the injuries here.
Yeah, okay. And we should say her name is Karen. It's an unusual way to pronounce it, but I just want to acknowledge that. So what I'm calling are the betrayals of life and of living systems. I counted 9 of them in this article, and we can't cover all that in our 25-minute podcast, but I'm going to say a few of them because I want to challenge anyone who's listening and is willing to go back and read the article to look for these and how they play out. The first one is managing behavior. The second one is scalable means compared to if you work nodally. Their whole definition of growth is outdated. We hinted last time also at the work that quantum physics brings us about working on hidden variables rather than the direct. You remember the old cue stick, me, cue ball, you, and I hit it so it goes in the pocket I define. Well, that one's all in here. They have also taken the idea of culture, which is one of those indirect ideas, and they've converted it into direct. What they've done is said, let's name the specific, quote, behaviors in the culture that we can observe. So they wipe out the power of using the indirect. They also, their idea is about doing, and culture is not about doing. It's about establishing rituals and symbols and becoming conscious of the ones we have and what need to move and what we give status to. And by the way, we need to be evolving cultures, not reinforcing them. And of course, then their definition of growth is financial only. We'll come back to that. They assume all this is about startups rather than, my goodness, this can happen for any organization that steps into the indirect hidden variables. And if you don't know what we're talking about here, go back to 155, the one we just before. And they leave out consciousness. In fact, they make consciousness almost impossible to happen. Zach, what jumps out at you from this list? And what do you see as the major perspective problem? And by the way, did I miss anything on this list?
I want to recall our last episode for a second. Because we can see again, as Carol said, the billiard ball theory of change at work here, the Newtonian view of life at work, which is a worldview that's embedded in behaviorism. So in other words, what the author is encouraging us to do here is basically tell people how we think they should behave and train them to do so until we get them to do what we want. So change, in other words, only comes from external impetus rather than an internal process. As a small business owner, I can see how this approach is actually pretty tempting. So there's like so much at stake, right, every day. And there's so much growth happening with new people coming on. It's like, how can I possibly maintain control of everything? But fortunately, we know that a direct approach to behavior change not only rarely works, but it continues to reinforce the current societal ditch that we're unable to get out of. Although, you know, Carol, with all these behaviorism-sourced articles, I actually do feel like I'm getting some great training manuals to help my husky Junie be better behaved.
Your dog, how funny. That's great. I agree. So I pulled out three crazy ideas that I want us to rebut loudly. The first one is the paradigm about what they're calling a particular culture that they're creating. And I believe the very nature of the culture they're trying to reinforce is toxic to humans. And they have a definition of growth that's toxic to ecosystems. And they have a method for achieving all this cultural, quote, continuity. And it is antithetical and toxic to innovation. In other words, what we've got is bad for business, it's bad for ecosystems, and it's bad for human beings. Three strikes, I would call it. What paradigm do you see this article being about? Could you say a little more about that and the implications of that?
Yeah, so I think this is teetering somewhere near arrest disorder and extract value. Like, think about the human beings in this situation for a second and the effect this is going to have on them. This is really about treating humans like machines and being able to program them to do what you want. Some might call it brainwashing, and they wouldn't be far off. So how then is one supposed to innovate or build a culture when everyone in the organization thinks the same way? That's just some giant homogenization, which is just craziness.
Yeah. In summary, what we think about generally what it's based on is the paradigm is behavioral, which we've talked about over and over again, is toxic to humans because it undermines their internal locus of control. It becomes external. And I feel that this article is such an example of this severe paradigm problem. It exhibits the most extreme case I've seen in any Harvard Business Review article we've reviewed. The reason that matters is because it assumes that human beings are empty of any inner experience and they're shills, just as human workers for us to empty shills, I guess I should say, where we want to impress on them the right behaviors from managers and supervisors. And they're given these specific behaviors that so they know they can get approved for them. And then they don't question anything and they never understand the source of where it all came from.
Right. And we've covered this in previous episodes, but for those unfamiliar, go look up John Watson and his student B.F. Skinner, who created and popularized the so-called scientific approach to behaviorism. So this approach essentially looks at in-depth research on rat behavior and training methods. It took that, turned it around, and attempted to apply it to humans. And in the process, certain large industrialists love the idea of being able to control their workforces. And this methodology turns out it was being deeply employed by the U.S. military by the later part of World War II. So from there, when it was all brought home, it bled into many of our social systems, including education, economic theory, ecology, and unfortunately, even parenting.
I almost named this episode The Toxic to Humans Approach. Please become more discerning before borrowing ideas. Or I could have called it The Anti-Innovation Business Program. And I laughed, of course, a bit as I did that.
So let's take each step and examine the advice the author gives us. It seems a bit important to describe what the guidance is and its source in the behavioral paradigm. Okay, so the first point she makes is that she's imploring us as readers to define culture in terms of clear, observable behaviors. As she says, quote, employees can live our values, as in the company's values, based on their personal understandings rather than what the company intends. Honestly, this feels like the old industrial model that hasn't skipped a beat since the 40s. And as Watson used to say, as a worker, you need only pay attention to the man above you.
The next advice they give is based on a lack of living systems understanding and a lack of understanding how life works when it's growing. And of course, 95% of people are convinced that the definition of growth, which you're using here, is the reason we should not have growth. Zach, what do you think is the assumed meaning of growth and what does that lead to?
I think they're clearly just mean economic and financial at the end of the day. So if we were to kind of distill this down a little bit, how many customers am I getting? At what rate? And how many staff do we need to handle all of this? Which in a sense, it's all reactive, right? And if you sense into what that really means, it feels like it kind of has this cancerous growth for growth's sake tone, and you wouldn't be far off, right? So this kind of growth comes from an extract value paradigm, the one that we've discussed before.
Life does not only define and primarily define growth that way. There are a couple of other definitions, and they are ecosystem friendly, especially the third one, which I'm the only one I'm going to speak to today. And I call that evolutionary growth. This is based on the idea of displacing offerings that are in the market that are not good for all stakeholders. It's not just an alternative, you know, that's less bad, but it really brings new functionality, new quality, new design, and so much more.
Consider that for a minute, folks, right? The idea that not only does a regenerative approach offer new design insights, but also the possibility of displacing other offerings in the market that actually degrade life and the vitality of stakeholders.
Yeah, people can't conceive of what you're really talking about here because they see people as rats in a maze, empty cells to be filled up with behaviors that you're supposed to mimic and be corrected by managers and trained and conditioned as you go along.
Yeah, and you see people as guides to one's intentions. Right? And their desire to actually contribute. This means you design work systems where people are called on to evolve all offerings and not just a narrow slice.
You build infrastructure that gives a path to innovate. You have an innovation framework that allows people to step into it and be tied to where the business is going. So like Seventh Generation did this with new baby diapers that work better than any other diapers. It was disposable and it was healthier for the baby's butt. And they took out all the toxins, but they didn't stop there. They were looking at the whole industry and how to move it when they evolved a diaper, not just get the toxins out.
So this right here, what Carol's pointing to, is what happens when you go from an arrest disorder paradigm of this kind of less bad way of working to regenerating life where one seeks to displace certain products and processes, thereby disrupting the whole industry with something better than what currently exists. You really regenerate life. That process takes bad products out that are unhealthy for some and maybe even all stakeholders. But you have to do essence thinking in order to do that.
First, you have to switch mindset, right? Because that essence, instead of becoming a non-toxic diaper, became ensuring health and comfort of baby and parents with diapers. That's really what I'm trying to do with when I present people what we're talking about right now, this developmental work design, which everybody participates in, because the first version of it started 70 years ago at P&G, and that was where my early inspiration was. But it's way beyond arrest disorder. It's not about setting up people in a certain behavior that they have to follow, which is, of course, what this whole article is about, but putting in place a whole new paradigm where everyone becomes innovative. Growth, which they talk about as 40% here is what their steep growth curve is. If you want to compare financials, every client I work with, we had a 35 to 65% per annum for the first 5 years with the kind of growth we did, and none of it had to do with programming people like rats.
So the third overarching shortfall in this article is, shockingly, also sourced from behaviorism. It comes from the suggestion to have the training that you offer for your staff not only happen offline and online, but also coupled with a library where you can find all the answers you need to any questions that you have.
Ah.
Yeah, I know. So these two points here really belie how the author thinks about people, right? Again, back to Carol's point, empty vessels that need constant external behavioral reinforcement, regardless of whether or not it's actually about the work.
And like you said, it's like dogs going to training camp. It also is antithetical to innovation. So it is bad for business. You are forced to do the scalable model of growth and let go of evolutionary growth, but it's very limited. The idea that training is a way to manage culture just breaks my heart. Plus, they do it as this conditioning process where people are stuffed full of stuff and never engaged in their thinking.
That's actually a good call, by the way. I should probably send Junie to that camp now that I think about it. But seriously, they are missing so many of the core ideas that are embedded in the regenerate life paradigm. It's kind of amazing. So the source of innovation is in all minds of the people who touch the products, processes, and customers every day. And what's more, that source of innovation is often your business's customers.
That was actually how Kingsford invented a whole line of products. All of the product line that we created was from people on the line working with people in a sales channel who brought in the R&D group as partners. So you see all those options on the shelf were now produced with closed system production that did not exist when we began. One product that was not a great product had low efficacy and it was highly polluting.
Yeah, so as I recall, they actually ended up transforming the industry. And as you said, grew, I think it was 65% per year, the whole time that Will Lynn led them to make barbecuing more ecologically sound, all the while forcing others in the industry to follow since they had a better product. And by the way, Kingsford actually ended up doing the same thing with Hidden Valley Ranch.
We had to start with unconditioning people who had been driven and put them into a developmental process. We evolved a culture, not preserved one. We set challenging, ambitious new direction that required the culture to shift in order to deliver and into one where people innovated by the promises they made to customers. And that came out of every role, every job title in the company. They still own 70% of the market. And Will has been gone for a while now. And we have a few behaviorists in place and leading, but they're still pretty hard to displace.
So the problem starts with scaling, or an expansion-oriented view of growth, which is more of the same, but with more people, right? So what the author's saying here is that we need to focus on the behaviors, which means managing people like rats in a maze by training them with knowledge. What you're left with has no potential for evolutionary growth, and being is dropped out of it completely. Plus, imagine for a second a library of stuff to be given to them that just keeps getting updated. The way you can train all current members and the new ones as they come in. Honestly, Carol, I'm getting a little exhausted and bummed out saying all this.
Yeah, you should. I'm glad to hear it. Alternatively, you can have a regenerative work design, which is designed in a way that is good for humans, it's good for ecosystems, and it's good for the business because the growth happens from innovation, not from scaling more of the same.
So, dear listener, you might be asking yourself, why don't more people adopt the regenerative life paradigm? I know it takes a switch in how you see the world and a lot of education. But I look at my own experience of kind of shifting paradigms and shifting these perspectives, and it's so easy to collapse into lower paradigms. I don't even realize I'm working from one a lot of the time. So I have to watch me constantly, especially when I'm feeling righteous because I see myself as, oh, I'm doing good here. I must be doing the right thing.
We can't even conceive of this new paradigm we're talking about here. If you're standing in a behavioral view, it looks foreign. It looks invisible. And they don't know that they actually have to work to get there. You can't just get a new list of do this, do that, which they're used to in programs. But you have to look at how you think and learn to see how your mind is working. Because restraints that you see, so what we're talking about, are all from the behavioral paradigm. And their beliefs are based out of this behavioral paradigm and that people can't be self-managing because the paradigm says they can't. They must be externally determined. They're fixed in intelligence and you have to import the right people. You have to let go of that paradigm, which, as you say, is not easy. The other thing I want to say to people is you don't mix and match and do a little behavior because they're incompatible. A little of this, a little of that will not work.
So in time, you'll see that you can't actually have incentives in place, rewards and role modeling and all the stuff that gets talked about in this article, because it's direct, behavioral, and sourced from an arrest disorder paradigm. And it requires the external kind of impetus to manage people and change all of it. Meanwhile, it's, as we said, all contrary to innovation.
People become fixated on training and they miss the most important part of the regenerative life paradigm, which is, and I know most people are going to have a hard time imagining this, but you're simultaneously doing innovative work while you develop people. So this means you do no work activity without doing development. You have a framework designed every time, which forces your thinking into a new way of looking. You don't use previous ways of directing. The training is the direct paradigm model, which really perpetually pushes people out of the ability to think and has people only applying what they're told versus thinking, what needs doing here? What is the activity we're going to take on? How are we going to make it work? It's a lot faster, deeper, and has higher effects beyond the moment.
So in the end, culture is not behavioral, like the author is trying to make it. And they're locking out a set of behavioral processes which undermine the possibility for all innovation and evolutionary growth. A regenerative life culture is based on constantly shifting rituals to be more self-managing, more developmental, and examining what's taboo in the culture as well.
Yeah, an innovative culture, the regenerative life one, is where humans are self-managing. And I don't mean flattening the hierarchy. That's a behavioral paradigm from the outside, just changing the structure. Regenerative is about constantly evolving the work, evolving the capacity, giving people more opportunity to express themselves, and switching from this, the external direction to the internal self-direction, and tying that up with customers, stakeholders, and market for every individual.
Pretty funny, but I guess we're back full circle to the last episode.
Yes. So if we want to work on culture, you learn to do it indirectly because that's what moves things and makes people be able to self-manage. And you work on capability, which is the developmental simultaneous with work. And by the way, they left out consciousness completely. They don't want people conscious. You can't bring in conscience, which Karn was worried about, and conscientiousness if you don't give the capacity for consciousness.
Carol Sanford Institute has been offering developmental communities for 40 years with online versions for a decade. So we're getting pretty good at it. What we're offering is a set of free morning meetings where we look at how to transform uncertainty into action based on a living systems thinking approach to inform our lives in times of crisis, your daily decisions and actions, and how to help others. Search on Facebook for the Regenerative Life Communities Group and answer the questions and listen. Join Carol's newsletter, by the way, at carolsanford.com to get more information on upcoming events.
And we are at this very moment launching a new community. If you are consider yourself an educator, I don't care whether that's with children or students or with adults, the community is established to enable working from this developmental epistemology we've been talking about. You move from an expert view to an experiential developmental view, working with the 7 first principles. You can check it out on seedcommunities.com to learn more. And by the way, we've extended the founder's fee, which is almost a 25% discount, till October 15th. And if you do that for October 15th, you're grandmothered into that lower rate forever.
Listeners, we need you. 4 ways. Recommend an article on business or business practice that you want a second opinion on. SurveyMonkey is the place to do that, which will be in the show notes. Second, please tell your friends to listen. We want to triple our audience this season, so help us get the word out. Third, give us a review. People read them, and it helps people know what we're up to. And fourth, if you can help us with our production costs with the show, that would be awesome. It costs about $10,000 a year for technical help, platforms, recording equipment, and all the goodies. So on our website is a way to donate with a pledge via Patreon for a recurring support amount of your choosing. Just click the button one time.
We hope you keep listening to Business Second Opinion for more ideas on how you work with the regenerative paradigms and practices. And my new book, which was out just a few months ago, you can buy and involve a group in a book club, because we have an extensive workbook that goes with it and some free workshops that go along with it. Go to carolsanford.com to learn more.
And thanks again to our sponsors at Guayaki in your pursuit of regeneration with high integrity. By the way, if you want to get one of our Second Opinion mugs, send us an article and topic on business practices upon which you want a second opinion. You can email us at carol@businesssecondopinion.com or find us on Twitter at @biz_second_opinion. If we use a developed an episode, you get a mug.
And thanks to Numi T. They sponsor our show notes, which we reference all the time, and Babson College, which continues to be the prime supporter for our business summer, which is happening November 17th. If you're on my email list, you will be getting a notice about this soon. It's for businesses and business teams. So check out the Business Second Opinion website for more about our podcast and join Numi T as the champion of our podcast.
This has been Business Second Opinion.